We're back again. It's Chase and Josh with Factor Fantasy. That's Chase and I'm Josh, and we're here to give you the next sequence of episodes in Season 1 of Demon Slayer here today. We're going to be covering episodes 19, 20, and 21. Chase took us through the last ones last week. I'll be guiding us here through today. Before we jump right on into it, I'll turn the floor to Chase to say a few words.
Already at the climax of Season 1, man, and it only gets better from here, but definitely enjoy this one. A lot of action on this one, so looking forward to it from pretty much here on out. Like, now we're starting to get into the good stuff, I would say, so now it's just up and up from here on out, man.
Hell yeah, brother. What do you say? We put our glasses in the air one time before I take us through it.
Cheers. Malice in the chalice, baby.
All right, let's get after it. So here, beginning at episode 19, it picks up right where episode 18 left off, when Tanjiro slashes his sword at Rui's web thread and it breaks his blade. And from there, we shift right from the blade breaking to the aftermath of Tomioka killing the father demon, and the father demon's body is disintegrating. And Inosuke, he's in shock and awe of how skilled and strong Tomioka is. And even in his admiration, he still tries to fight Tomioka. He still challenges him to a fight. And Tomioka, without missing a beat, says, "I have a better idea. Go train more." So that shit was funny as hell. Dude, what is it about Inosuke? Like, no matter what it is, he just wants to test himself against the best. This guy's obviously on his side, but he wants to fight him because he beat the demon he couldn't beat. Like, what do you think about this guy Inosuke here, bro?
I think it kind of, an interesting way to look at it, I think it kind of hurts his ego in a way to see someone so much more superior to him. Because think about it too, when he was probably, like, you know, growing up, like, the best of all the wild animals, and that's kind of all he ever knew, right? So for someone that such, like, entirely outclasses him is just something he's never even seen before, I would say.
I agree. And to move on from that, Tomioka even tells Inosuke that the father demon was not one of the 12 Kizuki, and that Inosuke should have been able to tell. And that sends Inosuke into a tailspin of just arguing, saying that he did know, and that it was Tanjiro that said it was one of the 12 Kizuki. And in all of his bluster and arguing, he doesn't even notice that Tomioka tied him up to a tree and left him there until the fighting's done. And Tomioka, he's still trying to, like, Inosuke's still trying to, like, wrestle out of the tie-up that Tomioka put him in. And Tomioka tells him, he says, "If you are not aware of what state your body is in, you shouldn't be fighting." And that's when the scene moves to Zenitsu. And he's still trying his breathing technique to slow the poison, but he's starting to fade fast. And Shinobu, she's there, she realizes he's basically on death's doorstep. She tells Zenitsu something kind of interesting. A little direct quote from Shinobu here. She says, "According to one theory, the reason you see images like that just before death is because you're searching for a way to avoid death by going through all your past experiences and memories." It's pretty interesting. Never heard that theory, but I guess it kind of makes sense in a way. You know, maybe that's why you see all your life flash before your eyes, see if there's any little bit of information you can to avoid the moment of death. So kind of crazy to think about. And from there, she ends up injecting him with the antidote. And Zenitsu turns over and he sees that more of the core showed up, but they're more of the healer portion of the core. And we'll get their name here later in this episode. He sees that they show up to get the bodies down from the other core members where they were webbed up. And it was almost as if Zenitsu was holding out to that exact moment, knowing everything was going to be okay before he allowed himself to lose consciousness and he made sure everything was being handled. So overall, man, I think Zenitsu is a good dude. He's a little bit whiny at times. He definitely has an interesting way with speaking to the finer species. But, you know, all in all, he's not the worst guy around. So from there, we cut back to Tanjiro and his broken blade. And internally, he has a monologue where he apologizes to Uro Kodaki and Haganazuka and decides that since he can't cut through the threads, he's going to meet Rui head on. But he's not able to get close. And so this is a point where Rui just decides to kill him since Tanjiro still won't take back what he said. And he casts a web net with those threads. And Tanjiro knows he can't dodge his attack. and for a second, it looks like the end for him. But right at the last moment, Nezuko comes out of nowhere and takes the attack in full. And Rui's sister is in shock that Nezuko, who's a demon, came out of her box to defend Tanjiro, who's a human. Rui is in shock as well and asks if it's her sister. And her wrist is almost severed completely off the bone. It looked really gross there. And there, did you see that part where her wrist was almost like put together? It was jagged up as if it was a bad animation, but it was actually great animation because it was showing the severed part of the arm. Did you catch that there?
Yeah, it's I mean, these spider webs of Rui's blood demon art, it almost reminded me of like barbed wire in a way.
Yeah, dude, it sucked. And from here, Rui cannot believe the level of devotion Nezuko has to Tanjiro and how she risked his life to protect him. He wants that level of bond. And his own sister tries to convince him that she's enough, but he ends up striking her with a web attack that cuts her head off. And even decapitated, she's still begging him for another chance. And he tells her to go kill the other humans on the mountain. How fucked up is that? That this guy who was all about this whole family core, wants his bond, gets annoyed by words that his sister said and cuts her head off. I mean, obviously she is a demon, so she's not going to die from that attack from him. But the fact that like that's like, your immediate reaction, you're just going to cut your sister's head off. You know, what kind of... I don't understand Rui. And I think that's whole, this entire hubris comes full circle of wanting this bond. He doesn't know how to develop it. He wants it through fear and through terror. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's... I'm no Rui fan because it's interesting. It's almost like he has... we talked about the ego with Inosuke. He like has his own ego about himself in a way. But yeah, he used like intimidation as a factor, which... You know, not giving anything away, but there's another one I think about that almost doesn't even use intimidation because he almost like welcomes on the other people in a way, but which we'll get into in a few weeks here. But yeah, that's why I'm no Rui fan. I feel like he thinks he's bigger than his own britches in a way.
Yeah, I think he thinks of himself as a sympathetic character and wants people to have affection for him unearned. And any event, Rui tells Tanjiro that he was genuinely moved by what Nezuko just did for Tanjiro. Rui says, "However, your fate now is death. A disagreeable conclusion for you, no doubt." And then he proposes a deal to Tanjiro. He wants Tanjiro to give Nezuko to him, Rui, in return for sparing Tanjiro's life. He wants Nezuko to be his sister. And obviously Tanjiro refuses him, and they are set to continue fighting. But right before the fighting resumes, Rui drops the huge bombshell. He tells Tanjiro, "Let's see if you can take down a being like me, one of the 12 Kizuki." And now we finally have it here on screen. We've been building it up for a couple weeks now. We've had two demons who thought they were a part of 12 Kizuki that were not. We had Kyogai, the drum demon, who was at one point in time but had been removed. And now we've got officially one member of the 12 Kizuki, and it is Rui. And that's actually, in addition to that, Tanjiro even thought the father demon was the one of the 12 Kizuki. So, you know, we finally got the big moment on screen. We are introduced to one of the 12 Kizuki, and we're about to see the level of difference between the strength of one of the 12 Kizuki versus normal demons. So to continue on from here, Rui has a small narration about what he feels the nuclear family is and each one's role in that family. And he once again gives Tanjiro the option to relinquish Nezuko in return for sparing his life. And Tanjiro declines once more. And Tanjiro sees Rui's eye and he reads that Rui is lower five of the 12 Kizuki. And Rui, he grabs Nezuko using his webs, and she tries to claw his face, and he doesn't even flinch. Like, he grabbed her over there, pulled her in with her webs, and she dug at his face like a full scar style in Lion King. She scratched him right across the face, and he didn't even move. And he ends up suspending her above them with webs, and because they're so sharp, they're slicing into her, causing her to constantly drip blood down from above. And this is where Tanjiro attacks, but he's clearly no match for Rui. Rui's whooping that ass, just toying with him. And at one point, Rui even gets so arrogant as to open up his arms and allows Tanjiro clean shots at his neck. And Rui dodged the first two and then even lets Tanjiro try and cut it with the third strike. But Tanjiro has no such luck. He hits Rui's neck and it's too strong and the blade won't go through. And Rui tells Tanjiro that he's no match for him and that his body is more durable than the webs he creates. And if he can't even cut the threads, then he's got no chance to cut Rui's neck. And while this is happening, Nezuko is trying to scream and fight, and her noise that she's making is annoying Rui, so Rui tightens the threads further, slicing into Nezuko, harming her even more. She ends up passing out, and Tanjiro has to calm himself down and not attack out of emotion. So he uses final form, total concentration, water breathing, 10th form, constant flux. And this really dope-ass water dragon appears out of his motion, and he's able to cut through the threads even with his broken sword. And Rui realizes that Tanjiro is gathering force with each rotation and that it could be worrisome. Then Tanjiro thinks that if he can keep closing the distance, he can defeat Rui. So in response, Rui ramps up his threads to maximum strength. And I thought this looked super cool on screen. They like seal, it almost soaks the threads in blood. And so they come up with this really blood red thing along the threads. It looked really awesome. And he uses his blood demon art called Cutting Thread Cage. And for all intents and purposes, it really does look like Tanjiro's fucked here. Because he can't get enough rotation to cut those threads so he can dodge them. And like the thread cage has already encircled him. So there's no way he can move out of the way. And so Tanjiro starts to think that this is where it ends for him. And he has this quick flashback daydream of his father watching him and Nezuko play as children. And Tanjiro's father says to him, "Tanjiro, you're breathing. Master your command over it and then become more like Hinokami." And the flashback moves to another flashback and it's their mother. And she took Tanjiro to see his father's Kagura dance. And his father tells him that there is a breathing technique that exists that will prevent you from ever exhausting yourself. And his father tells Tanjiro that he wishes to pass down the ceremonial dance and earrings to Tanjiro. And that's when the scene cuts back to the present time, and Tanjiro inhales and yells, "Hinokami Kagura, dance!" And the water dragon turns to fire, and the rotation with this new technique are enough to cut even the maximum strength threads that Rui conjured. Rui starts retreating, but with Tanjiro using Hinokami Kagura in full pursuit, he eventually sees the opening thread and tells himself that he needs to strike Rui's neck now, even if he, Tanjiro, gets himself slashed in the process. So in the middle of that sequence, we get a subconscious scene shift to Kie, which is Tanjiro Nezuko's mother, and she's telling Nezuko that Nezuko needs to wake up and save Tanjiro, and that Nezuko is capable of doing so. She tells her that Tanjiro will be killed if Nezuko doesn't. So then Nezuko wakes up and she uses her blood demon art, exploding blood, and it burns the remaining threads away from Rui and Tanjiro. And Tanjiro is still at this point is in Hinokami Kagura, and he's able finally to get to Rui's neck. He yells that the bond between him and Nezuko can never be broken by anyone, and even with the stunted blade, removes Rui's head, and the episode ends. So that is how episode 19 ends, and it looks like we got the job done here. And before we continue on, Chase, what are your takeaways from episode 19?
It is a badass fucking episode. And one thing, too, if you notice, like Nezuko, the way he strung her up, she was kind of like a spider caught in the web there. And it, just like you said, it like kind of went through almost like barbed wire, and, you know, Demon Slayer is no stranger to being gruesome and graphic, and she was screaming. You could tell how much pain she was in, but, and it, just like you said, you know, like when Rui was saying, like he used his cage blood demon art, you thought Tanjiro was fucked. Like that was pretty much it. And, you know, I remember watching this for the first time and I was like thinking like, wow, like he just really can't get an upper hand on this guy. And, so I didn't see it coming, especially the fact of thinking about, you know, we even talked about it last week. You know, Tanjiro is still fighting with a broken sword here. And it's basically like the more than the hilt, of course, but it's like not much to fight with. So you're sitting there thinking, wow, like there's really no way out of this. But it was fucking awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought the coolest part of this episode was the fact that he used a water-breathing form that he learned from Urokodaki and then transcended it with the Kagura dance, the Hinokami Kagura dance that his father had taught him. So it was a combination of techniques that weren't even supposed to be used in conjunction with each other. It had never been done before. And like I said, I thought it was awesome on screen when that blue water dragon looking thing appeared with his rotations. And then when he was in Hinokami Kagura, it turned red. It was really, I don't know if you guys ever played the old Pokemon games. It kind of reminded me of Red Gyarados. You know, you can find like the shiny Gyarados in gold and silver version. I just thought that was badass, man. I thought that was really cool. But at the in the episode as a whole, yeah, it was pretty much action from start to finish. You know, it started off with really the aftermath of the Father Demon and Tomioka cutting him up and that Father Demon disintegrating and Inosuke going all crazy. And then right back to over with Zenitsu, the aftermath of that quick fight. And then we jump right into everything that we just saw happen. And you know, we finally get an introduction to one of the 12 Kizuki, which we've been waiting for quite some time. And now we can see the difference. We see the Blood Demon Art difference. We've seen him use two forms of his Blood Demon Art. And, you know, going into episode 20, we might see a little bit more. So it was a really cool episode. It was very action-packed. And, you know, the way it leaves off, you know, we're feeling real fucking good. Right? You know, Tanjiro looked like he cut Ruby's head off clean. You see that thing just flying in the air, severed, and you're like, damn, he did it. You know, and it really made you feel like it too when with Nezuko helping out with her Blood Demon Art, burning the threads away, him using his father's technique to get it done. It really left you feeling like, yeah, man, we fucking did it. And then we're about to start episode 20. So I guess before we go ahead and jump on in here, I will go ahead and pull this up and take us through episode 20, and this episode begins with the scene prior where Nezuko had used her Blood Demon Art and Tanjiro cut off Rui's head, and like I said, it seems as if it's all over, and the threads holding Nezuko burn away, and she falls to the ground. Tanjiro can barely move, but he thinks he won and that his father saved him with the Kagura manifesting into a technique, and Tanjiro is in a ton of pain, but he thinks he needs to go save Inosuke still, because remember he left Inosuke to his own devices to take on the Father Demon, and so he thinks he's got to go move over there to save him, and realizes that the scent of blood just got stronger, and there was no smell of ash like there was when he killed other demons. And we see the body of Rui stand up and start walking toward Tanjiro, and there's webs connected from Rui's hand to his severed head. And it turns out that before Tanjiro was able to complete his sword stroke that would have taken Rui's head off, Rui cut his own head off himself using his threads so he wouldn't die. What a fucking intellectual maneuver here by our guy Rui. These 12 Kizuki really are showing you there's levels to this fucking game. What'd you think about Rui using his own threads at the last second so he cut his head off and it wasn't Tanjiro that did it?
Yeah, it was a really smart thingy. It makes me think, too, I think he kind of probably had the idea to do that. Like, remember when he was saying, like, the threads were burned away? Like, he was, like, really shocked by that when he pulled up that Hinokami Kagura. So, in my mind, he probably did it during that time period just to be on the safe side with this guy. But it just goes to show, I mean, the 12 Kizuki or, you know, Tanjiro really, it's kind of like, you know, not bringing up too many other franchises, but how we were saying Ahsoka was beating up on nobody. Tanjiro and Nezuko really haven't fought a true force yet until now.
Yeah, man. And so from here, Tanjiro is trying to get up to continue the fight, but he's struggling mightily. And Rui's now even more pissed that Nezuko's Blood Demon Art only burned Rui and his threads and didn't harm Tanjiro at all. So he uses another Blood Demon Art called Murderous Eye Basket. And Tanjiro still can't find the energy to move. And the Blood Demon Art strikes and cuts into Tanjiro. But before it goes too deep, out of nowhere comes Giyu Tomioka. And with three easy slashes, he cuts away the Blood Demon Art threads that were about to kill Tanjiro. And in one of my favorite lines of all of Season 1, he turns to Tanjiro. He says, "You did a good job holding out until I got here. Leave the rest to me." Shit, that shit was badass. But anyways, Rui's annoyed now that there's another human he has to deal with, so he uses another blood demon art, cutting thread rotation, and Tomioka isn't even phased. He uses total concentration, water breathing, 11th form, dead calm. And Tanjiro's shocked because he was told by Urokodaki that there were only 10 water breathing forms. And so seeing this 11th form definitely, it was a surprise to Tanjiro. And Rui's cutting thread rotation was passing right through Tomioka, and Tomioka doesn't move at all, but the threads are somehow getting cut away as soon as they touch him. So it's not like he's slashing at him with a sword. It's like they're touching him and they're falling apart on their own. It was super fucking cool. And Rui goes to try it again, and I swear, this shit was as if you were just taking a leisurely stroll down the fucking park, bro. Tomioka calmly walks up to Rui. Rui blinks once, and as he blinks, Tomioka had already walked past him, and with one swing of his sword, cleanly decapitates Rui once and for all. Like I said, as if he was just going out to grab some milk from the store, dude. It was fucking crazy. What do you think about how simple this was? We just saw this wild battle. It took everything out of Tanjiro to even get close to a win here, and Tomioka shows up, does like four things, and it's game over. Like, what do you think about the level that this dude's at?
It was fucking cold, man. That was one of the coldest moves ever. What did he say? I'll take it from here. Like, you did good holding out till I got here. I'll take it from here. Like, that was one of the most coldest lines and the coldest fucking move ever. This is what we've been fucking talking about, man. It's like people don't realize like the different levels here. Like, we just thought like our fucking hero has met his fucking match. Like, it doesn't get any tougher than this. Like a member of the 12 Kizuki. Well, now we realize like what a Hashira can actually do. And it's just the levels are drastic. It's like college to the NFL. Like, it's a whole nother world. And just with fucking ease, the water fucking Hashira, Giyu Tomioka, taking care of fucking business, man.
Taking care of business.
Every day.
Dude, it was so cool, dude. And also, I like the next movie he did, too. I don't know if you guys really caught it. It was just something small, but it was kind of cool. After he had cut his head off, he had just flicked his wrist once, and all the blood came clean off his blade. As if, like I said, it was just the easiest thing in the world. He's like, all right, that's annoying. Let me get this blood off real quick. Just one flick of it with his muscle twitching, and the blood flies off, and he's got a clean blade again after just decapitating one of the 12 Kizuki. That's wild, bro. This shit was badass. Anyways, from here, the scene moves to Rui's sister. She's running through the mountain, scared that she messed up things with Rui and how this was her first time messing anything up. And she has a flashback of her past where she was being chased by 5 members of the Demon Slayer Corps, and they cornered her in front of a house in the middle of the woods. And it looks like she maybe had just recently transitioned to a demon. She looked kind of younger. And the members of the Corps notice that Rui is high above on the house watching it all unfold. And the members of the Corps reiterate that they need to be careful, that even though Rui looks like a kid, he's still dangerous. So Rui, he asks the sister demon if she wants him to save her in exchange for being part of his family, and she agrees to it. And Rui instantly kills all 5 members of the Demon Slayer Corps. It was wild. Like, in this flashback, it almost as easy it was for Tomioka to take out Rui, Rui snapped his fingers and threads came out of nowhere and pieced them all up. 5 in one little pull. It was crazy. So we got to see Rui in action again there in that flashback, and how exactly his family of his that he put together came to be. So the sister demon, she sees the rest of the family that Rui brought together. He welcomes her home, and he tells her that starting today, she will also be a part of his family. And Rui cuts a drop of his own blood into a bowl of water, and it turns that bowl of water red. And the other girl in the room tells the sister demon to drink it, and that Rui shares his power with them. And this is a direct quote from this girl, by which she says, "He is a favorite of a certain someone, and because of that, he has permission to do this." Thought that was a cool foreshadow for somebody that we saw in brief passing not too long ago. So the sister demon drinks it, and she starts convulsing and foaming at the mouth, and Rui puts his hand on her head, and it turns her ghostly white, just like the rest of the family that he made. And the other girl, at one point late at night, she tells the sister demon that there is no blood relation amongst any of them, that they're just a band of strangers. And outside, while they're having this conversation, the mother demon accidentally reverted to her previous non-white skin form, just how she normally looked, and Rui punishes her cruelly and tells her that she will play her assigned role. And that's when the other girl back in the room continues on talking about their fear of demon slayers leading them here, but that here may be just as bad. And Rui punishes the ones that disappoint him by either carving them up, taking their intellect, or burning them in the sunlight. And so the other girl tries to run away and bring the sister demon with her to escape, and says that she trusts the sister demon. But as they run down the mountain for that great escape, Rui is standing there waiting for them. And we see it's because the sister demon told Rui on and gave up the other girl's plan. So Rui ties up the other demon girl with his threads and left her bleeding until the sun came up and she burned to ashes. And the sister demon thought that would gain her favor. And so then she shifts her thoughts back to like the present-esque time and then how she thought the rest of the family members were fools, but laments that she still messed up because she told Rui the news about the mother demon and the elder brother demon being killed and begs him to run with her, to run away. But while she was having that conversation, her face changed back to the pre-non-white ghostly form, and that pissed Rui off, and he slashed her face. And while the sister demon is thinking back to these moments, another member of the Demon Slayer Corps bumps into her by accident, and she attacks him by trapping him in a ball of yarn that's supposed to melt him, almost like acid. And as she's proudly talking about her blood demon art, Shinobu comes out of nowhere, very super nonchalantly, and talking about how the moon is quite lovely. Like, what is going on with these Hashira? They ain't got a worry in the world. They're acting like this is just another day at the office. They're basically on their coffee break right now. I don't know, man. But anyways, the sister demon attacks Shinobu, but is no match at all for Shinobu. Shinobu says, "I can see you have no intention of being my friend, now do you?" And the sister demon tries to defend herself by saying that someone else is forcing her to do all of this. And if she doesn't do these things, that she'll be torn to pieces. So Shinobu gives her a chance and tells her that she will save the sister demon, but the sister demon has to answer a few questions. So Shinobu asks the sister demon how many she's been responsible for killing. The sister demon tells her that she's killed 5 humans and says that she didn't want to and that she was forced to. Shinobu tells her not to lie about it because she watched the sister demon turn the other member of the Demon Slayer Corps that we were just talking about into a cocoon and knows the sister demon has eaten at least 80 humans because she came from the west and witnessed all the cocoons suspended above the trees with all the human captives liquefied inside. And in that spot alone, Shinobu counted at least 14 cocoons. She said she wanted to verify the death toll was accurate so that the sister demon receives a proper penalty and that she's reborn. And she says that the victims need to receive justice. And one of her direct quotes, she says, "I could gouge your eyeballs out or perhaps slash your stomach and rip out your organs. For every life you've taken, I'll take the same amount of pain on you, and after you suffered through all the agony required, your sins will be forgiven." And Shinobu tells the sister demon not to worry because none of that will kill her or leave any lasting effects since she is a demon. But the sister demon isn't having any of that and attacks Shinobu again, but Shinobu easily avoids it and she says, "I can see that we'll never be friends after all. Aw, what a pity." And then she uses this cool butterfly-type maneuver. Everything turns purple and pink, and butterflies swarm in with each other. And one of the butterflies lands in on the sister demon's finger, and it almost looks like it kisses or puts its mouth onto the demon sister's finger, and it turns red like blood. And the butterflies are suddenly gone, and we hear Shinobu using insect breathing, butterfly dance and caprice, as she cut the demon sister with her blade. And what we notice about Shinobu's blade, it's different than the other blades we have seen to this point. It's like a thin piece of metal with just a sharp tip at the very point of it instead of a full blade. And the sister demon thinks that it's because Shinobu is small and doesn't have the arm strength required to behead her. So she goes to attack again, but screeches out in agony, and she looks that stuff starts happening to her body. Like it's almost like she's poisoned, which, you know, that's actually exactly what happens. But I even made the comparison. She almost looked like Joffrey at the wedding when he was dying from the poison himself, like choking, turning a different color. She couldn't even barely move. And Shinobu says, "Just because you haven't been beheaded, don't think that you're safe from harm. There are those like me who use poison with their swordsmanship. Demon Slayer Corps, Insect Hashira, Shinobu Kocho. I may be the only one among the Hashira who is unable to decapitate demons, but creating a poison that's lethal to them, that's quite impressive, don't you think? Oh, pardon me. I guess you can't hear me if you're dead. Silly me. And then Shinobu cuts the other member of the Corps out of the cocoon, whose clothes had already melted off of him, and saves him, though, so he himself hasn't been harmed. And he asks if she should finish the sister demon off, but Shinobu tells him that she's infected the sister demon with the wisteria poison, that the sister demon's already dead, and they can leave her to rot. So that's when Shinobu sets off to find the demon responsible for making the sister demon do all those bad things, but wonders if Tomioka had already gotten there first and beaten her to it and finished the job. And that's when the scene goes back to Tomioka and Tanjiro as Rui's head is falling off his body. And even in death, Rui keeps saying he's going to kill that, he says, that brother and sister, which he's obviously referring to Tanjiro and Nezuko. And that's when Rui goes into this subconscious mode where the mother demon asks him what it is that he wants and what he means by family. And Rui tells her that he has no memories of being human. And mother demon asks him if that's why he's made them pretend to be his family. And Rui thought that if he could feel a family bond, that his memories would come back. The bond of a real family. He says, that's right. I remember. And as the scene shifts from the subconscious state to where Rui's decapitated head is looking at Tanjiro covering Nezuko with his body in protection, the episode ends. And that is the end of episode 20. What'd you think about episode 20, man? What are your takeaways for this one?
It was fucking awesome. And Shinobu's a fucking badass for sure. It was just like, oh shit, didn't see that coming. Ain't that something? Oh, it's fucking sick, man. She like literally dove down and darted through her stomach in a way, and it makes me bring up a lot of questions, because I don't know if Urokodaki was just telling Tanjiro kind of a story here, or he knew about the poison. But also, what a full circle moment, because we've been talking about wisteria leaves, right? And she made that poison from the wisteria blossoms, which now, you know, we know why, in, for instance, on Mount Fuzikano or whatever it was, whatever that name was, why they were so scared about going past those wisteria leaves. But it was awesome. I mean, and Giyu Tomioka showed exactly what a fucking badass he was. I mean, just with ease, killing the top dog that we've seen so far. And you see the real difference of the 12 Kizuki and what they bring to the table. And it even goes to show with Rui, right? Even after Tanjiro thought he decapitated him, you know, he removed his own head just to basically even showing, too, with that cage he went and threw at Tomioka, which Tomioka stopped it. But he had other blood demon art available, so he really wasn't even trying with Tanjiro here. And I think it really caught him off guard when he met someone else. You know, like they always say, pick on someone your own size. And it was a lot bigger than his own size. So it was just action-packed from the beginning to the end. This is definitely one of the episodes that I would say, even today, at this moment in time, still defines Demon Slayer as a series. Like, when you think Giyu Tomioka, this is one of the moments you always think of, just because how fucking smooth and cool that motherfucker is. So it's badass, man. What are your takeaways?
A lot of what you already said. And to add on to it, you know, can you imagine the shock that Tanjiro must have felt? You know, leaving last episode 19 thinking he did the impossible and took out one of the 12 Kizuki with a broken blade and finally thought he could rest. And then this episode starts up and Ryu's like, ha, just kidding. We have to go again. And you know how the demons regenerate. So he's ready. He's almost good as new, ready to go. And Tanjiro was a broken Nair on the ground. He's like, dude, I just gave everything I had to try to kick this guy out. And now I've got to like try to get my ass up again. And then again, like you were talking about, seeing the different types of blood demon art, trapping him in that cage and Giyu coming over and just very easily wiping those threads away. And we saw how hard it was for Tanjiro to cut those blades. Like, he had to go to Hino Kami Kagura just to cut those blades. The Tomioka just waved them three times and those things disintegrated like they were never there. So it's just crazy. The strength levels of these guys is different. Everything's a little bit different. And, you know, I thought like we get that one of the badass lines. He did a good job holding out till I got here. Leave the rest to me. Woo! That was hot. And then to continue on, like just we got to meet another one of the Hashira. And what I like about Demon Slayer is we've mentioned it before, but the creativity level of just them doing different things like insect breathing. What the fuck was I supposed to do with insect breathing? And then we see lots of this really dope ass butterfly technique where she poisons the demons, and the sister demon couldn't even move. She ended up getting poisoned within seconds, and then she was already dead in the ground. He's like, yeah, we can leave her here to rot. Oh, okay. Sweet, dude. Like, it was awesome. But then on top of it, we start to get a little bit of a backstory into the family that Rui created for himself. And, you know, in the episode we're about to jump into now, it expands on that a bit further. But you start to see the ways that he manipulated them and abused them to just bend them to his will and force that bond of family there where really it's not. It's all a sham because they're afraid of him. And we get to see a little bit of why he felt the need to do this here coming up in episode 21, but we get to see a little bit of backstory here in this one. So there's just a lot that went on in this episode. Like you said, there's a lot of action. There's a lot of story. We get to see, you know, not just a member of the 12 Kizuki and how they're able to, they fight a little bit smarter. You know, he took his own head off with his own threads. Like, who would have thought to do that? You know what I mean? But on top of that, we get to see just a little bit about how sometimes demons make choices throughout their lives that lead them to where they are, where, you know, maybe if things were different here or different there, it may have been a totally different outcome, and they may not ever have been the worst versions of themselves after all. So that being said, I'll kind of shift us here into the last episode of the day, episode 21. This episode begins, and it's like a snowball fight amongst three boys. And it looks like they're having a good, innocent time playing, having some fun. And then an older boy tries to walk up to join, but is too weak and falls face first into the snow, unable to get up. And the woman calls out for Rui and comes to his aid. So we find out there that he is the boy that was too weak to walk, and that he's not supposed to be outside. And of course, we now know also that we're in a flashback and that Rui's narrating it. And we've learned that he's always been frail since the day he was born. And even walking was a struggle. He could never run until Master Muzan appeared. And Muzan tells Rui that he will save him from that harsh life. But his parents were not on board with it because it turned him into a demon. And he couldn't be exposed to sunlight and it had to devour humans. So Rui explains how he heard a story about a father who died trying to save his drowning child. And that the display of parental love deeply moved him, but he felt that he hadn't received the same type of love from his own family. And his own father tried to kill Rui with a knife in Rui's sleep. Of course, this is after Rui had been a demon and killing other humans. And his mother didn't try to protect him. So his father stabbed Rui with the knife, and after the blood spills on the floor, the scene shows Rui sitting outside in the aftermath. Because obviously, you know, a knife to the stomach can't kill a demon, but the parents aren't going to know that. So it goes on, he says he believed that they didn't have a genuine bond, but his mother bleeding out on the ground says a few last words. She says that she's sorry that she couldn't give him a strong, healthy body, and those were her last words to him. And it turns out the plan from the father, it was to kill Rui, but that he, the father, and the mother were going to die with him in an attempt to atone on Rui's behalf for the sin of killing someone. So Rui realizes that it was a genuine bond after all, and Muzan came back and essentially blamed the parents for not accepting him for who he is and told Rui to take pride in his own power. And Rui missed his parents every day to the point where he couldn't stand it, and even after crafting a family of his own, the emptiness remained because he was the strongest and he couldn't depend on anyone to protect him. He sought out a bond that he was never able to claim for himself, and as this whole entire monologue is happening, the decapitated body of Rui in real time is moving towards Tanjiro and Nezuko, but it collapses just shy of them. And Tanjiro notices the scent it was giving off was one of grief, too overwhelming for him to bear. And so Tanjiro puts his hand on Rui's disintegrating body, and Rui feels a warmth and kindness. And Rui internally apologizes to his parents and hopes they can forgive him. He is certain that he's going to hell because he's killed too many people. He doesn't think he can be in the same place that his parents went. And then we got this sort of King's Cross purgatory-esque moment where Rui's father comes in this like white shrouded mysterious background and tells him that it's not true and they'll be together no matter where Rui goes. And his mother tells him that they'll be with him always, and his white ghostly skin fades away to his normal body and he cries in their arms apologizing and asking for forgiveness. And then snap back to reality, Rui is fully gone to ashes and has passed on. And as that happens, Tomioka walks up and steps on Rui's shirt, which is a sign of disrespect. And Tomioka tells Tanjiro not to waste his sympathies because it was a demon that lived for decades terrorizing humans. But Tanjiro snaps back at Tomioka and says, "If it's for the sake of avenging those who were killed, to make sure there are no more victims, I won't hesitate to bring my blade down on any demon's neck. But when it comes to those who felt despair and regret from the actions they took as a demon, I will never disrespect them. Because at one time or another, they were human, no different from me. So please don't step on his remains. They're not hideous monsters at all. Instead, demons are hopeless creatures, tragic creatures." And Tomioka realizes at that moment that the people he just protected are Tanjiro and Nezuko. And not a moment too soon, because as soon as that realization comes, so does Shinobu come out of nowhere trying to kill Nezuko. But Tomioka blocks her blade with his at the last moment, and she flips over to the other side and she says, "Why would you get in my way, Tomioka? And after all you told me, we could never be friends with demons. I have to say, this kind of thing is exactly why no one likes you." That's kind of fucked up for her to say, right? That's when the scene moves over to one of the other Demon Slayer Corps members laying unconscious, looking poisoned. And we find out that the members of the healing squad of the Demon Corps are called the Kakushi. And the Kakushi members inject him with the antidote, and the boy starts to heal. They talk about how amazing Shinobu is for making the antidotes on the fly, and how amazing Zenitsu was, too, for slowing the poison down with his breathing. And then we cut back to Shinobu and Tomioka. And Tomioka goes, I don't think I'm disliked. And Shinobu replies, "Oh, dear. I do apologize. You're only just hearing about this now, then? I'm sorry. I didn't mean for you to find out this way." I said, "Damn, bro. It's cold, Shinobu. What the hell? You're coming out here with this nonsense." But then Shinobu asks Tanjiro to move away from the demon. Tanjiro tells Shinobu that it's his sister. And Shinobu tells Tanjiro that she'll only use a gentle toxin to kill Nezuko, thinking that it's a kindness. And Tomioka tells Tanjiro to take Nezuko and run. Tanjiro thanks Tomioka and runs. And Shinobu says to Tomioka, "Did you just break the rules of the core?" And from there, Tanjiro takes off with Nezuko. And he's in so much pain, he has to keep moving to get them out safely. And he wonders if he'll have to leave the Demon Slayer Corps now because he doesn't believe they'll allow him to stay and travel with a demon. And the scene moves back to Shinobu and Tomioka. And Shinobu realizes that he's not playing around. And she can't believe that he, as a Hashira, would defend a demon. So she takes off in pursuit of Tanjiro, and Tomioka gives her chase. And Shinobu reminds Tomioka that there's someone else he needs to watch out for too, not just her. And that's a quick little foreshadow, because in the next scene right from there, Tanjiro's running and another Demon Slayer appears out of nowhere, knocking Tanjiro and Nezuko both to the ground. And she doesn't say a single word, which goes up, ready to cut Nezuko's head off, and Tanjiro grabs the back of her cloak and pulls her down and tells Nezuko to run away as fast as she can. And then the Slayer that he pulled down knocks Tanjiro out and chases Nezuko. And she catches up to her and swings her sword, and Nezuko shrinks into that child form, which she does from time to time, and dodges a sword strike. And she keeps running, and the Slayer is wondering why Nezuko isn't attacking back, but she says it doesn't matter because she has her orders. And then the scene moves back to Tomioka and Shinobu again, and he's holding her in a headlock type of way, and she's asking him for a reason of why he's preventing her from killing a demon. And he starts to go into the backstory, saying that, as he recalls, it was 2 years ago, and then she shuts him down by asking if he's going to go into a long-winded story just to spite her because of her telling him that no one likes him earlier. So she takes that moment of hesitation, and she releases a blade from her heel and swings it up from behind herself, behind her back, and it's about to stab Tomioka when a message crow shouts out and brings him a message from headquarters. And the message is that Tanjiro and Nezuko are to be taken into custody and brought back to headquarters. So Shinobu and Tomioka immediately stop fighting. And the Kakushi, the Demon Slayer healers, they start rounding up everyone. They find and bring Inosuke, and he questions his strength if he couldn't even take out one demon. So he starts feeling sorry for himself. They've got Zenitsu too, and he's talking about how the Kakushi, they clean up the aftermaths of the Corps' battle with demons and how their sword skills aren't quite as polished, and so that's what they really specialize in. And so everyone's leaving the mountain, and we got this beautiful scene. And one of the Kakushi is trying to wake Tanjiro up after we get all these beautiful scenes and just a little bit of a pause. And he's not waking up, and he struggles, but he finally opens his eyes. And the Kakushi says, "You're in the presence of the Hashira." And the camera pans over to a bunch of badass-looking demon slayers smiling down at him, and the episode ends. And that's it for episode 21. What did you have for takeaways on this one, brother?
It was badass, man. And just the whole, I mean, it was fucking awesome watching, you know, Giyu and Shinobu really go at it. But even from the beginning, you know, one thing that's so creative about Demon Slayer, just like you were mentioning, is they really get you to kind of see into the villain perspective and how they did have a past. And it's not just, once again, the typical fantasy epic, right, of good versus evil, and this person's all evil for this reason. Like, you see kind of into their past and how they kind of regret their actions. And it really was a full circle moment for Giyu, because it made him kind of think back to the beginning when he realized there was something different about Tanjiro and Nezuko and how he gave him that chance. But then, you know, you have one of the other best of the best. And what's crazy is we just saw how strong Giyu was against Rui. And even he knew, like, he just said, like, run. Like, I got my fucking hands tied. Like, I mean, it's going to take all I can just to hold her off of you. Much less, there's nothing you can do against her. Like, she would whip your ass. Sorry, like, just fucking run. And it was really funny because it's very interesting. I kind of feel sorry for Giyu in a way, because he's not a bad guy. Like, there's someone we're going to talk about next week that I really can't stand, that is a Hashira that we saw very briefly in this episode, just in the pan out. But he's not like an asshole. Like, he's very quiet and calm. He's very real, which is, you know, one of the best qualities to have. But I think because he kind of is his own untraditional style, and in the words of Achilles, you know, soldiers just fight for kings that don't make their own decisions. So, I mean, and Giyu, in the words of Achilles, he's a lion. Immortality, take it, it's yours. And he kind of does things against the mold, right? Like, he gave Tanjiro and Nezuko a chance, which, I mean, besides Orochimaru or some of the other ones, like, it's very rare that probably would have happened. Then at the end, you know, and now Tanjiro and Nezuko are about to stand trial, and how badass was that at the end, which we'll get into more of them next week. But, just now seeing more of, like, what the level is. Like, we've only scraped the surface of how dangerous things can get, and really the power level of the Demon Slayer core. So really looking forward to things to progress here. What were your takeaways, Gianelli?
Yeah, I thought my takeaways were this episode, it did a lot. You know, we remember when Inosuke and Zenitsu had their first interaction, you could kind of forgive Inosuke because he lived in the wild, doesn't really know any of the rules, but they were telling him very adamantly, like, it's against the rules for Demon Slayer Cormorants to attack each other. And I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, Tomioka was attacking Shinobu, but they were definitely crossing blades and they were swinging some heavy metal. You know what I mean? So I don't really know how they're going to look at that, you know, going forward. We're going to have to find out a little bit about that next week. But that could, you know, not only just letting a demon get away being one of the rules that are broken, but crossing swords with Hashira versus Hashira could be a problem as well. So I thought that was really interesting that Tomioka felt so strongly about Tanjiro and Nezuko that he was willing to fight off one of his own. You know, there's only a certain number of Hashira, and so they're a close-knit group, and they have these crazy abilities, so they've got a lot of respect for each other. And for Tomioka to go out of his way to take Tanjiro and Nezuko's side means he must have really saw something there that no one else has seen yet to this point. And you even got a little bit of a full circle here, because that thought process I just had mentioned about him seeing something, he wrote that note to Earl Kodaki that Earl Kodaki read off in, I think, like episode 2 of season 1, where Gyo was telling him about how he thinks they're different and could play a big role in things to come. And so he really is doubling down here. Not only is he does he realize who they are, but he's like, fuck, gotta save their ass again. And not now this time, I gotta save your ass against the Hashira, another one of me. Like, so this was crazy to watch that go down in that way. And then not to mention, which maybe I'll say this for a second, where the hell did this other girl come out of? You know what I mean? But we had it very specifically a couple episodes ago where, what is his name, Ubu Yakishi, gave orders to individuals to go check things out. So I don't know where this other one wanted to just stick her nose into some business. But regardless, we'll get there when we get there. But this, And then I thought it was also cool to be introduced to the Kakushi, like these Demon Slayer healers, the ones that were Demon Slayers but not quite good enough to get to the level where the core felt comfortable in their fighting abilities. And they realized, well, we're going to need people that have different skill sets, and healing and gathering and cleaning up areas is definitely something that is necessary. So I thought it was cool to be introduced by some of them. And then just like you said, to kind of close out the entirety of the episode, you just get a camera pan to the Hashira, and they all just look badass. They're all just like across arms, like smiling down, look jacked as fuck. You can tell every single one of them has some wild ability just by the way that their presence emulates off the screen. I thought that was really cool, and we're about to learn more about them a little bit next week when Chase takes us through the next couple episodes there. So I thought that is a really great way for the episode to close out, and for us to close out here for today's episode. But before we do that, let's go ahead and jump into some of the debates that we may have. Chase, what do you have for your debates for the day?
Yeah, this is a two-parter for my debate for the day. One, it takes us back to a few weeks ago now. We were talking about how Earl Kodaki said the only way to kill a demon is by slicing off its head, or with a Nichiren sword or sunlight. Do you think maybe he didn't know all the details of things, or he was just kind of seeing that in generic terms for Tanjiro? Because now we're even seeing how, for instance, Earl Kodaki told him there was only 10 forms of water breathing. And he taught Gyu Tomioka, and there was an 11th form. Or at least we're assuming he taught Gyu Tomioka something, because he wrote him a letter. So maybe that's kind of the case. Or also, another part to that is we know it was Shinobu and Gyu that went out to Mount Nadagomo to, because they heard there was one of the 12 Kizuki there. And of course, Gyu found them and they went east and west. But before that, we were talking about how basically a whole battalion of Demon Slayer Corps members were destroyed. But today is the first time we really see why Ubuyashiki might have really debated about sending one of them out there. Like, was it worth, risking one of your main guys, almost like a quarterback on a football field, or one of your stars, right? Like, is it worth risking one of your stars against these backups? Like, almost if the backup quarterback is playing, right? And I mean, it was that easy for them. So do you think Ubuyashiki should have sent one of them in earlier? Do you think he made the right decision? And what do you think about Earl Kodaki's thought process? Because clearly him and Gyu have a relationship just based on that letter he wrote him, and Gyu shows us the 11th form, and they thought there was only 1 through 10, and he also said there's only 2 ways to kill a demon, which now we've seen multiple ways to kill a demon. So what do you think about that?
I'm gonna answer the second one first, because it really just ties into a debate we've already had about battle plans and what we think should have happened there. So, yeah, I just to kind of close that one up and make it quick, and just a little repeat of what I had mentioned previously, is like, I think it'd be nice to have just sent one Hashira in as a supervisory capacity and just to make things sure, to give the other Demon Slayer core members a chance to get the job done. But when you see it start to go sideways, the Hashira steps in, does what the Hashira needs to do, but give them the fair chance first to work it out for themselves. But if you see shit really starting to go south, you already got to be there ready to hop in. You know, the only thing that I could think of why that wasn't the case is if all the Hashira had missions of their own, but we obviously saw that they didn't, because Ubu Yoshiki was able to, you know, summon, we know for sure too, and you know, I will go into one in just a little bit. But in any event, I just want to get that part away, because I do want to really dive into that next thing that you mentioned, because I think there's a couple ways to look at this. So it's very possible that Uro Kodaki was just giving a brief overview to Tanjiro and not really going into all the specifics, or it's possible that Uro Kodaki, there's stuff that maybe he just doesn't know. I would like to think that's not the case, but I'm not positive, you know. But let's think about it from the other way, because if you remember, he didn't have any plan on passing Tanjiro to the test to go to final selection. He didn't think he was going to make it past a boulder. So that's why he stopped training him. So maybe because he just wasn't as like locked in and really thought that Tanjiro could be this great demon slayer, he didn't seem to care as much. Maybe it wasn't as important for him to go into the minute crazy details of every little possibility, because he didn't even plan for Tanjiro to go anywhere from there for the most part. So I guess that might be a part of it. And then, you know, but like on the other side of it too, though, like if that is the case, then what's the point of Tomioka sending them, Nezuko and Tanjiro, there just to get like a basic level? Like, no, like, you know, the whole point is trying to get this demon turned back into a human and then seeing if that could be replicated to where we live in a world with no demons. So obviously, you know, you got to do something. So I don't know, maybe Urokodaki just thought it wasn't important in the moment because he wasn't sure, or just, again, it's very possible maybe he didn't have the information himself. I just find that one just a little bit hard to believe, because he seemed to be a very important part, because he was a member of the Hashira too, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. So there's a couple ways to look at that there. I'm going to lean towards it was just not in his forefront of his mind to give every tiny, minute, minuscule detail, because he's going to learn things along the way, Tanjiro is, right? So what's the point? You know, is Tanjiro as a base level demon slayer, I forget, the Mizunoto, is that how you say it? As a Mizunoto, is he really going to be able to use the other forms of killing the demon? Is he really going to be able to whip up some poison real quick? Is he really going to be able to utilize Muzan's like ability? You know what I mean? So is it really that important for Tanjiro to know? Probably not. So maybe he just gave him the shit that he could use. Like, hey, listen, like, I know where you're at right now. All you got to worry about, sword, head, off, sunlight. Boom. All right, next lesson. You know? And then the other part of that with Giyu, Tomioka, I think it's very possible that Tomioka learned the 11th form on his own. I bet that Uro Kodaki had never gotten past a 10th form. I bet that he maybe had mastered all the 10 forms there. But Tomioka, he's so skilled, and it seems like he's got such raw talent. I wouldn't be surprised if he learned the 11th form on his own while he was out there being a fucking badass. It's very possible that that's the case. You know, I don't necessarily believe that maybe Uro Kodaki even knew of an 11th form, or only gotten to 10 and just really had mastered those 10 before doing other stuff. And Tomioka took that and raised him like in a poker game. I'll check and raise you 400. I don't know. So those are just the kind of thought process I have about the debates there. But what are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's start with the Uro Kodaki part, since we were kind of leading off of that, leading towards the end there. Uro Kodaki, I do entirely agree with you for this reason, because we know Uro Kodaki made it through final selection, and we have a prime example today that Shinobu used the Wisteria poison to destroy demons, and we know in final selection they use Wisteria leaves to keep demons in there. And Uro Kodaki caught the hand demon that we refer as to the hand demon, the green demon, in Mount Nanagumo all those years ago and knew it would stay there because of Wisteria leaves. So my thoughts are, obviously he knew there were probably other things that could kill demons, but just like you were mentioning, I mean, he never thought he'd even make it past the boulder. So those were probably just like the two things he was like thinking at the moment. Hey, like, this is how you kill a demon. Like, he didn't plan on going into all this stuff. And the part with Giyu, for that part there, and then we'll go to the battalion thing. It very well could be possible that Giyu just discovered that form on his own and learned something new. There is a specific form that will happen in a few weeks with one person that isn't exactly a form. So, and that's specific to that person. It's more of an art, I would say. So it very well could be. And I think that's something special about the top you have here. Almost like we just saw today with Hinokami Kagura. It's something, of course, like it wasn't like, you know, he was just practicing with a sword and having to be there. Like, there's got to be a historic factor to it. But I agree with you entirely. I think there has to be something there where he probably found it at some point. And just like, you know, that's what's interesting about today. It plays so many important roles, even from an action, from not just an action perspective. But this just opened up a whole can of worms that's going to play a big role in this series going forward with what is this Hinokami Kagura that just came out of nowhere, right? So I agree with you on both of those things. And then the battalion situation with Ufia Shiki, I don't know, man. I kind of think it's just this battalion sucked. I mean, like, I don't know. I probably would have just let them all die and left Rui on the Mount Nagatomo because he hasn't really gone anywhere. He's just kind of built his family, and you just risk, like, it wasn't much of a risk, but anything can go wrong at any time. Like, you just, like, don't know. Ironically, not giving anything away, but that's what might happen in a few weeks. But I'm just saying, anything can happen, and you got to think about that being the guy that's like the coach, right? You're the coach on the field. Like, do you really want to risk your best fucking guy playing some backup nobody JV team? Like, I probably would have just let him die on the mountain, man. Like, sorry, but we gave it a good run, Tanjiro and Nezuko. And keep in mind, it's not like Giyu volunteered. He didn't know his ass was even there. Like, they just got assigned this mission. Luckily, I am not the head coach because we wouldn't have a story. But, like, I am not now. Granted, that probably would have been the right thing to do, is send in one Hashira to knock it off. But if you have something go wrong, you're down one of your best guys on some wasted garbage.
My only answer to that, dude, is we got to take care of him eventually. What are you going to do? Just keep sending battalions and hoping one gets the job done? So even if you do, like, get everyone killed, you're going to have to send in a Hashira eventually anyway. So might as well do it at the front, get it over with. Yeah, you can't just let him live on the mountain and killing humans for the rest of his life and be like, well, don't feel like sending one of my Hashira out there, so guess you can stay on that mountain and kill as many humans as you want. All good. Like, you know what I mean? You gotta take care of him eventually.
Bigger fish to fry, man. We got Pimp Daddy Muzan over here wandering the streets of Japan going to see movies. I would focus on that shit first. Leave that motherfucker on the mountain. He's been there for thousands of years. Let him keep building his family, and then when his family gets an army, maybe the 11th form won't fuck them. Like, maybe. You might have to run the 11th form twice. But I just think you got bigger fish to fry, man.
Sending out missions, you gotta die. You gotta kill him eventually. I just don't think you let so many die before you just get him out of there. That's my opinion on it. But to move on into the debate that I have today, who the hell was this other girl running into the damn fucking game between Shinobu and Tomioka trying to get to Tanjiro and Nezuko? She's like, you got someone else to worry about too. Well, I don't remember this girl ever being mentioned at all. I don't remember Ubu Yashiki approving anyone else to go along for that mission. I heard two names. I heard Giyu Tomioka and I heard Shinobu Kocho. That's the only two I heard. And then all of a sudden, Tanjiro's running with Nezuko through the forest, running up that hill, and then boom, smack down to the ground. And we got this other girl here about to kill Nezuko. Where the hell did she come from? Was she allowed to be on this mission? Why wasn't she there from the beginning? She's not a Hashira, right? But she may be able to do some damage. Why not send her in first? If you don't want to send anyone to your Hashira, you want to play it like Chase, fine. Don't send in your star players for the JV game, fine. But then what the hell was this girl doing? She was just there doing a whole lot of nothing, but she just happened to be there ready to take out Tanjiro and Nezuko when the time came. What the hell was that all about, Chase?
I don't want to give anything away. This person that you're talking about, we have seen her before, and I'm not going to give anything away. We will find stuff out later, but what I'll say about that, to me, that was Ubi Oshiki didn't think this person was worthy enough to give direct orders, and it was kind of like Master Yoda talking to Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then Obi-Wan goes and tells Anakin to go get some shit done. That's kind of what I was thinking here, which explains why she would be there.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because yes, we've seen her in the past, but just for her just showing up out of nowhere here to where we are in this point in time, it didn't make any sense. Or else, if you're going to do that, we should have just had her in from the start. She should have been the one that was a little bit above the other rankings and did some work and tried, took out a demon or two. It would be nice. Where was she for the father demon? Where was she for the mother demon? Where was she for the elder brother demon? Where was she for the sister demon? This other one did absolutely nothing. All she had to do was take out a very injured Tanjiro and a Nezuko who had just been cut to threads a billion times over and barely any blood left. This person did absolutely nothing, wants to come and take all the credit for catching the demon at the very end. Nah, she fucking pissed me off, dude. That's what I think about that.
I can see why you're upset. I truly do. However, all I'll say, I'm not disagreeing with the situation because that was weird, but this person is no pushover. In fact, anyone that's seen my pieces of my collection on TikTok that follows us knows I have a figure of this person. She is no pushover, and that's all I'll say.
Oh, we know she knows pushover, but I'm saying she was lazy as fucking didn't do anything. All she wanted to do was go there for the group project, put her name on the paper, and get an A. She did nothing. She killed none of the demons, definitely didn't do anything against Kizuki. And then while Tomioka and Shinobu are battling out, she's just like, you know what? I'm going to go pick on the lowest level demon slayers here and this demon that hasn't hurt anyone. I'm just going to go pick on them. So in this moment, she's on my bad side.
Maybe they should flip a coin to decide what side she should be on. Who you want to side with.
Yeah, making decisions. Can't make them on her own. But in any event, I think that's a good place to leave this one today. So this was a fun one. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, folks, if this is the very first time that you have joined us here, we really hope you enjoyed what you heard and stick around and keep on listening to us from here on out. And if you've been here since the very beginning, thank you for continuously being the shields that guard the realms of fantasy. If you're looking to where you can find us online, we're on all the social sites. We're on Instagram at Official Ridiculous Patronus. We're on TikTok at Ridiculous Patronus. Backup Instagram at Fact_or_fantasy. Backup TikTok at Fact_or_fantasy. Facebook fan page, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy. YouTube, Ridiculous Patronus. Twitter, RP Factor Fantasy, Snapchat, RP Factor Fantasy, and we do have our own website as well, ridiculouspatronus.blogspot.com. So please click like, subscribe, leave reviews, leave star ratings, comment on the post. All the audience engagement is really helpful to us here on the show. And where you can listen to the podcast as well. Well, if you're an Apple user, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, you can find us on Google Play. We're also on iHeartRadio, we're on Audible, we're on Amazon Music, we're on Stitcher, Acast, our host site, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy are there, but we are out for the day because this has been another ridiculous production.
Chase and Josh
Factor Fantasy, signing off.